Whoa, is this the new copier?
It sure is, Dennis. They installed it this morning.
Can't believe corporate actually listened to our request.
Yep, I guess Christmas came early this year. This thing rules. It collates, staples pages, no more stapling by hand.
Yeah, Santa should have wrapped it.
What?
The printer. Santa should have wrapped it when he gave it early.
Oh. This is going to make our lives so much easier.
I know, this is so much nicer than the old copier.
Yeah, I know. And Santa and all his elves must have worked so hard on it, and then they gave it to us early.
It's a very nice printer, Tracy. Just make sure no one copies their rear end, eh?
Oh, that naughty old elf must be one mean bastard to give us this so early.
What?
Did I stutter, Megan? Santa Claus.
Okay, it looks like the printer has gotten everyone a little too excited.
Of course it did.
Everyone just go back to work.
TBTL!
I have never heard someone say so many wrong things, one after the other, consecutively, in a row.
If there's a better use for the internet, I haven't found it.
It's embarrassing and it's gross, but at least it's kind of funny.
This one was created from a wooden vase from Fiji. Unsure what type of timber, but it's a ladies' bong for ladies.
What do you say we go out and get some Carvel?
I got the time if you got the diapers.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everyone to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
If you don't like drama, you might want to put your phone away for this one.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
A highly paranoid, very large individual talking a bunch of nonsense.
Getting larger by the day again. I had made a little progress during my 60-day challenge. But I'm now liking to kind of put a little capper on the evening by standing over the sink, as I was last night, post-football watching in a kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, a fog, a haze of serotonin just being released into my brain, just coursing through my body because of that very dramatic and exciting Seattle Seahawks football victory. Just standing over the sink, folding slices of Kraft singles of American cheese over crackers while eating them, drinking Diet Coke, and watching TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever level of life that is, consider it unlocked. Consider episode 3,269 in a collector series unlocked, because that is where we are today.
Let the fun begin.
By the way, I don't know if I mentioned that I am coming to you today from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Nice to be back home after a few days down in Portland last week. We've got some top stories for you, including the story in the Wall Street Journal that Quibi, the much maligned, I guess you could say, a streaming service that Jeffrey Katzenberg launched. It's been really unsuccessful, and so, like with most bad, unsuccessful business ventures, they're now looking for people who want to buy their bad, unsuccessful business venture, and the responses have been rolling in from the potential buyers.
No way, Jose!
It's even worse than I would have thought in reading some of the kind of fine print of the Quibi contracts between them and the content creators. So we'll update you on that. Also, speaking of selling things, will turkey farmers be selling as many turkeys this Thanksgiving?
Spiced turkey meatball pitas.
When people aren't getting together for Thanksgiving in the same way. Because, you know, COVID and all of that. Oh, and speaking of birds, there's a real kind of love-hate relationship between the Home Depot employees and those birds that live in, like, every Home Depot.
There's something about the soul of a bird.
I don't know if you are a home improver, as I am, but if you've been to a Home Depot or a Lowe's for that matter, you know that there's a whole ecosystem of birds living in those places. So we'll get into that if we've got time. We definitely have time for this guy, the longest running cobra of the show. Known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their majesty, he is straight gas homie. He is Andrew.
Hey, Gorgol.
Walsh. He's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Blessed full second week of Trucktober to you. Mm-hmm. I hope it is finding you and yours peaceful and celebratory this season.
Yes. Uh-huh. But safe as well. Keeping a safe distance. I was celebrating Trucktober with my sister and my brother-in-law and their kids in Portland on Saturday. And I have to tell you, it's, in the words of my friend Andrew, I don't think I have this at the ready, but, you know, it's still weird socializing because I'm really trying to take the social distance stuff seriously still all these months later, and in fact, maybe even more so now because, like, you know, there's upticks all over the place. And they are, too. They're very serious about it. So when you visit someone, it's like you come in the house. There's definitely no hugging. It's like, are we going to wear masks indoors? How far apart are we going to sit? It's a delicate dance these days. But it was nice to get to see Sarah and Josh, who have also now been listening to a lot of TBTL, which, again...
So that your way of telling me to just, like, not use the material I was going to use, flaming them today?
Don't... I know you have a tight 11 on making fun of my nephew, Little Luke, but this is not the episode for it because right now this is blaring throughout the Pine Street Market in Portland, Oregon, right now as my sister and brother are operating their restaurant, Pollo Bravo, which is, of course, available for delivery to a place near you if you're in Portland. That's really what it was. It was an ad for my sister's restaurant.
I know. That really went from... We got little Lukey's off the hook from my flaming, and now we get a little ad in there. Nice.
Now, if you have a tight 11 on Big Luke shamelessly promoting his family businesses on this podcast, that we will be accepting.
Oh, my God. I ate... I think the only food that entered my body yesterday was pizza, starting with a frozen pizza that I heated up during the Browns game. I didn't eat it frozen, although I was so hungry. By the time I sat down to that pizza, I probably would have. And then we ordered a regular pizza from like a restaurant, Pudge Brothers, which I keep calling Chubb Brothers on accident. Mm-hmm. And now I think it should just be called Chunt Brothers. Yeah. and that's all I ate. And I woke up this morning. Well, let's be honest. Thea woke up screaming at the foot of the bed. He woke me up, and I had the worst heartburn you could imagine. So I actually thanked him for waking me up so I could eat some Tums and go back and get a little bit more shut-eye.
It's sad when those commercials that you see that are aimed squarely at very middle-aged people, where like a chicken wing is punching a guy in the face.
Yeah, I don't know if have I seen that?
Those ones are disgusting, by the way. I actually actively dislike those ads. It's like, I think that the tagline is like, when your food fights you or fights back or something. In Soviet Russia, food fights you. But it's like, the problem is, in particular the chicken wing one, it's covered in sauce. And so it kind of looks like it might not have even been cooked. And it's more of like if you were having a chicken wing and you were like in Mexico or you were hanging out with people who cook in that style, I think it's called alitas. And it's like it's not like we think of as a hot wing you'd get at your local hot wing purveyor. It's got more of the wing on it. It's like the whole wing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's not separated into two.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that whole wing, it looks – sorry to – kick things off here on a Monday morning this way, but because they wanted to cover it in sauce, it looks like maybe it's raw and or bloodied.
Oh, God.
And it's punching the guy in the face, and then it's leaving barbecue sauce stains behind. And this is all supposed to illustrate the point that when you get to be our age, Andrew, your food does fight you. Now we have to think about things like, am I elevating my head ever so slightly and my chest while sleeping?
I was doing so as
to keep the stomach acid down where it's supposed to be. Have I taken my various Tagamet and the like? So it's sad when those commercials actually do start to go, yeah, I got to remember that.
Is that a commercial for like a prescription medication or something that you take on the reg as opposed to like the highest grade I'll go
You've
right
gotta
now?
You've got to be careful when you say on
Tums.
The reg because your Ohio accent makes it sound almost like you're saying on the rag, which I don't think is the preferred nomenclature anymore.
I'm pretty sure anybody would agree that you just made it worse by saying that. Like, on the off chance that anybody happened to hear that in the way you heard it, they would have dismissed it quickly with the context of the statement. But instead, you interrupted and highlighted it, and now I can't remember what I was getting at.
You were asking if it was a kind of heartburn medicine that you take on a regular basis.
Right, because I only go in for Tums, something that I don't even know if I'd have those if Genevieve didn't bring them into our life. Now, I'm not trying to put her on blast as far as her medical history, but it's just a weird thing that, like, I didn't grow up having heartburn. As a young man, if I got heartburn, I didn't really think about it much. And then, you know, when Genevieve and I moved in together, we just now have Tums around. She probably grew up in a family that where Tums was more of a – just more of a regular part of life. And so now I'm kind of like, what would I do without these Tums? I've never purchased them myself, though. I've eaten a lot of Tums, yet never in my life have I purchased a thing of Tums.
I know what you mean. That's a family cultural thing, I think, or maybe it just has to do with whatever the there's an official my dad has this now. I think it's called like GERD or something. It's like gastrointestinal reflux disorder or something. Mm. If you grow up in a household where the dad had some kind of a situation, there's always like Tums and Pepcid and all manner of that stuff around. By the way, I found the commercial in question. And I would say this to the ad agencies of America. If you want to get free time on a moderately listened to podcast, either be a business owned by one of my family members or do a commercial we don't like, because that's the number one way to get talked about on the show. I think this is like maybe third out of the last five shows where we've done something like this. But can I just play this commercial for you? It is, by the way, for Tums. Mostly I would like you to see it, though, because it's grosser than I even remember it. And you won't pick that up from the audio. So there's a tailgating situation going on. And a guy is picking up one of these chicken wings. He's got a little paper plate with some potato chips on it. And he's about to enjoy himself. And the chicken wing, like, punches him in the nose with its weird talon. Because, again, in order for this commercial to work, they have to go with the, like, much less traditional way a chicken wing would ever be served at a tailgate. I mean, you might get some people that are legit with the Alita style, but this is not how most of us would probably see most of the chicken wings at a cookout. The chicken is punching him again. He's trying to bite it. Oh, it's just disgusting. It looks like a human liver or heart that has just been removed from a body is just smacking him in his face.
Can I say this here? Because I'm now watching it.
Okay,
I watched
good.
It as you played Thank that. You. And this might just be me. Maybe I don't represent the listener here.
You're
but for
hungry?
Some reason, no. For some reason, the way you described that, I pictured a man-sized chicken wing. Like, he went to go to eat the wing, and then for some reason, suddenly it became this fantasy sequence where the chicken wing is the size of the man, and they're, like, boxing it out or something. But no, I see. He's just trying to get this wing up to his face, which you're right. Like, you wouldn't bite it like that. Even, like, it's got all three parts of the wing still attached, and he's just putting the whole thing up to his mouth. So I don't know what he expected to happen. I think any sane person, even in a tailgate, would rip it into three parts. And then, you know, if you can picture a traditional wing with that extra little thing sticking off it, I don't know what his plan was going in. So it's kind of on him anyway. And then it just starts. Yeah, the food itself, which doesn't change shape or size, as he brings it up to his face, it just starts punching him and smearing sauce all over, which that really gets at something that you and I kind of have in common, although we approach it differently, which is having sauce on the face. I will still eat ribs and chicken wings, and I love them, and I love the experience, but I need at least one napkin per wing or per rib, whereas, of course, you're a vegetarian. But even before you were, you just avoided those messy situations anyway. I cannot stand having sauce on my face.
You made such a good point, by the way, which is that in order for the commercial to – in order for, I guess, the premise to work, they want this food to attack him. They have him presenting the chicken wing to his – he's bringing it up to his mouth in a way that would indicate, I guess, his plan was to literally bite the weird little – like, it's a talon on the end. I believe that either as a feather or a fingernail growing out of it, that part of the – it wouldn't be a fingernail. It would be some kind of a wing, you know. Like, the – I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes with these commercials, and I'll also point you in the direction of the I saw a new Snoop Dogg Corona commercial this weekend, or it was new to me, where he's talking to Bad Bunny.
Oh, yeah. I was telling you about that on the show last week. Remember?
I couldn't remember which one you had been referencing. I knew you were. And so, yeah, that one, I'm with you, man. Like, it makes no, it's like, it's just a jumble of things. Like, he's saying playa, and then Bad Bunny is supposed to be like, no, it's playa. And it just feels like that's such a, they're like, oh, he says playa, but if we were speaking Spanish, we would be calling it the playa, like the beach. And I just was, that commercial was very bad as well. A lot of bad commercials out there, but a lot of good football games, Andrew, which we will be talking about in the No Point Conversion. Later today, which will come down this very stream. I am saying that to try to tell myself to not just completely transition into football talk, because let's be honest, that's all I care about on this Monday morning.
You know, there's a big article about Bad Bunny, a big profile of Bad Bunny in the New York Times, I believe the Sunday Times, and I had flagged it for myself. I was waiting all week for a Sunday night, or really a Sunday morning, so I would read this feature, because he's kind of all over the place now, and I understand he does have a charm to him, and that's the only thing that sort of saves that commercial with Snoop Dogg, is he's got, you know, a very specific style and look, and I do feel like he's a charming person, but that those commercials with Snoop Dogg for Corona are just a mess. They don't make sense. I mean, a shell rings. This is why it came up last week. And then he's on the beach, and so Snoop just picks up a shell and starts berating the person on the other end, who he thinks is on the other end, saying, "What, you can't call me on my shell phone?" Like, and then Bad Bunny's like, "No, it's me." Like, well, who did he think it was? Who did Snoop think was calling him on his shell phone?
I mean, it said blocked number. It's probably either a telemarketer or a bill collector.
That's probably true. I got Bad two of those
Bunny.
Today.
Bad Bunny recently did this. Sort of, what would you call it, collab with Crocs. And the Crocs, they sold out in 15 minutes. You could not, like, the resilience of Crocs as a shoe, as a style of shoe, and as something that had, they're basically they're sort of the New England Patriots of shoes, in that they don't rebuild, they just reload. Like, you would think, like, if something got as popular as Crocs, then it would have to, I mean, and then they were very mocked for a while. They were kind of a joke, but not for very long before they were back, baby, as a fashion thing that all of the, you know, millennials and young people like. And they've got all kinds of little, you know, little gewgaws and things that you can snap into the Crocs that are kind of decorative. That's a whole way of, you know, they've got Disney ones, you name it. You know, there was like KFC making them so that they look like they're made out of like fried chicken or something, or like the fact that Crocs only had about a year or two where we were allowed to make fun of them, and then they just returned with a vengeance, and now they do these collabs, and like the Bad Bunny one, it was a whole thing. People couldn't get these Bad Bunny Crocs fast enough.
Yeah, the Crocs thing, I'm trying to put that into some sort of cultural context myself. And, of course, that's why people turn to me, because I really have my finger on the pulse of everything. But, like, Crocs came out in the early 2000s, if memory serves. And I feel like they were both popular but also kind of immediately derided by kind of, like, our generation, which derides everything, right? Because they were like, sweatpants for the feet. They were, like, too comfortable and dorky-looking. And while some people liked them from a practical standpoint, it was kind of a way of saying, and this is very classist, I'm not buying into this, but it was kind of like this people of Walmart kind of like snobbery about the way, you know, people look down on Crocs. And then I think they became very useful for people who were nurses and work in their garden and stand on their feet all day. And they sort of appreciated this sort of like, hey, listen, you're going to make fun of my Crocs. These Crocs represent me doing hard work. So I just don't care anymore. Like, people kind of started rejecting that snobbery. And now they've come around to a point where I feel like there's this, we kind of relived recently a lot of 90s fashion. Like, you even see some of that retro goth look coming back with some of the kids. You know, I'm in the U District a lot, so I'm always seeing like what the kids are wearing. And you saw like a lot of that 90s sundresses sort of thing, and some even a little bit of flannel kind of coming back. But now that we're through that kind of grungy period, I feel like what we're seeing is a celebration of the stuff of the 90s that we used to make fun of, you know, like the dorkier stuff from the 90s, like the high-waisted pants, the really big glasses that, you know, 5 years ago people would have potentially teased you about, the kind of trashy tie-dye or the commercial tie-dye, which that ties into the NFL, like the NFL apparel company is like releasing these.
Man, those
like
hats were just terrible looking.
I know. Like, they've been out for a couple of weeks, and they're trying to, you know, they have them on the sidelines so that they'll sell them in the apparel store. But anyway, I kind of group all of that stuff together, that kind of 90s, it wasn't cool then, but now it's sort of this generation's reclaiming it in very much this sort of like, well, why would we, I don't know, it's sort of comfort first, and nobody's going to make fun of us for looking this way, which I think is an improvement.
I mean, it's probably, I think grunge came and went and may have come back again. Like, I'm with you that I feel like if there is again, nothing like a couple of middle-aged white guys taking their heartburn medicine just long enough that they can weigh in on young people's fashion. This is we're in a tight window here, Andrew.
I literally blushed as you said that with embarrassment, thinking
not unlike Russell Wilson throwing to DK Metcalf with 15 seconds left on the clock last night. We're in a tight window here where our heartburn medicine is working, so we can get these words out. I think that this is from TikTok and online and maybe some real world observation from the safety of my car. I'm with you. I think that the overall style vibe for the sort of younger people of America, and I'll count anyone under 30 as being part of the younger people of America, I think the vibe is sort of whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more so than it's been in a long time. Like, I don't think there's any one specific look that is the kind of way to fit in. Whereas in our generation, there were kind of uniforms that people would wear. If you were this kind of person, you would wear this. This would be the way you signal to the world that I like a certain kind of music, or I go for a certain kind of vibe. And it just feels like it's way more open and free form now, which I think is great for the kids. It also makes it much harder to form any strong opinions about it. To me, a lot of it is not flattering, but, you know, that's just because I am at a point where the only thing I can wear is either a black t-shirt or if I'm going to wear a jacket over it, or a blue button-up penguin collared shirt that is, you know, kind of hides my growing midsection. So anything tie-dyed, anything that's look at me is off the list for old LB. And by the way, that is also my campaign slogan.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me is off the list for LB, because it's just not flattering. Like, prints, loud prints are not flattering on me. Any kind of attention grabbing anything is not what I am in for these days at age 44. I want to blend into the background, and I want to try to move through the world making as few waves as possible, and maybe ever so slightly flattering my ever changing body type with the clothing decisions I'm making.
If anybody wants to know, if anybody listened to my kind of cultural dissection there and is wondering, who is this guy? What motivates him? Where is he rooted in culture? I am looking at YouTube right now after having watched that new Tums commercial, or that Tums commercial you told me about, and here are the five...
Tums to Tums, Tums, Tums. Hey, I totally forgot about that until my brain remembered it.
Here are the five recommended videos for me after watching that, okay? And this will tell you exactly who I am. It sums you up perfectly. The first recommended video, Vikings versus Seahawks Week 5. Watch the highlights. There's one. Number two, fastest way to get netherite in Minecraft. Not entirely sure what netherite is. Second video, this is an indie pop band from Canada called Men I Trust. Some video for them. Then Weird Al Yankovic's Isle Thing, which is a parody of Wild Thing by Tone Loc. That's the fourth recommendation. And then
what happens in Isle Thing? Like, oh, here, I'll play it for you. Isle.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You're in the aisles. I thought he meant like you're like walking through the aisles of a CVS looking for Tagamet.
I'll let Al speak for himself. The fifth video is a Tums video.
Met this fine young thing at the local Circle K. She made a date for a 8:30, and I said, what the hey? So I journeyed to her crib, and I let myself inside. That chick was slouched down on the couch. I think her brain was fried. Couldn't figure it out. She wouldn't even look at me. Then I saw her eyes, she was hypnotized, cold glued to her TV. Said, what's your problem, baby doll? Let's have a little fling. She said, hey, you fool, now just be cool. I'm watching that Gilligan's Isle thing.
Wow.
You didn't know that's where
it
was going, right? Yeah, the whole thing
is too many layers, Al.
The whole thing is about him trying to date a woman who's obsessed with Gilligan's Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
watch it all night. Tum Tums, the man on Amazon.
I don't know why he put the Tums commercial in there. That feels also like a lot going on. I thought, okay, there's so many unexpected, I mean, God, what a journey. There were so many twists and turns. First of all, when you said Wild Thing, I assumed it was going to be that older version of Wild Thing, You Make My Heart Sing.
Oh, no, I thought I said Tone Loc, but maybe.
Maybe you did, but I was looking up a Tums commercial. I had things, I had a lot going on here, Andrew. But so I was not expecting the Tone Loc version. And then, yeah, I was expecting Isle Thing to just be a song about life in the islands. Like, you know, we got to get that Airy Vibration Man. Oh, that's a guy I've started following on TikTok. This dude that just cooks in Jamaica. Like, I actually, you know what? I don't know if he's in Jamaica. I assume he is. He's a very, very thick Jamaican accent. He's just cooking Jamaican food. By the way, all of it meat-based. None of it stuff I would eat. But his banter, his patter, if you will, as he's making, like last time I was watching him make breadfruit with saltfish and something else, it is like our friends over at Calm, fine sponsor of the show, need to hire this guy to do a nighttime, like one of those stories. They got Harry Styles or whoever doing. They got to get this guy doing where he's just describing Jamaican food he's making. It's just, and it's, I'm getting like every third word. And I don't even care. It's just so soothing. I love the guy's accent. So I was expecting that to be more the direction that Al went, but he didn't.
No, it's about him trying to, again, like it comes off this song. I feel like he starts off in a character that I'm somewhat uncomfortable with. He's more aggressive in his, you know, romantic pursuits than I'm comfortable with. Of course, he's playing a character like a lot of hip hop stars do. It does kind of settle into this idea of, well, will you pay attention to me? But no, she only wants to pay attention to Gilligan's Island. But then you don't care if I spoil it, do you?
No, go for it.
At the end, he starts to fall for the Gilligan's Island TV show, too.
Does he work in a 3-hour tour, 3-hour tour joke? Because I feel like that would be really leaving some money on the table.
I feel like he must. I don't have this one memorized like I used to have Ryer the Kaiser memorized. I no longer have Ryer the Kaiser memorized either.
I am now just trying to, if I can, on the fly, roll through my who I'm following on TikTok to see, Andrew, if I were to play you some of this guy cooking Jamaican food, if you would be able to tell what he's actually talking about minus the the pictures. But I can't really find him on the fly. It turns out I'm following more people than I would have thought of. I'm following Eric Wareheim.
Oh, I just started following him too. He's got like two videos, I think.
I'm following Jose Andres, that chef, that really great chef. I'm following this super funny guy named – well, his handle on TikTok is Sahib Can't Sing. His name might be Sahib Singh. Super funny comedian. He seems like he might be from, like, I don't know, the South or something. And then who else in there? Because nobody cares about this. Again, just a lot of people. PDUSA, our guy. Nora Borealis, our friend Nora from the APM universe. I was trying to figure out which one of Nora's many projects we should promote. Probably the one that we work most closely with, which is Terrible Thanks for Asking. And then a bunch of other stuff. So anyway, I will not play you. I will not play you my Jamaican cooking guy. But I would just highly recommend if you're looking for something relaxing, check that dude out.
All right.
Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll do these top stories, and we'll get to some emails and V-mails. Coming up. This is TBTL. Stay with us.
Thank you, baby.
Hey, let's thank some donors of the day. Generous, wonderful, supportive folks who are making it so that we can do TBTL 5 days a week. Talking about Don Bly of Seattle, Washington. Also, Dave Gabala of San Francisco, California. Christine Mello of Wiley, Texas. I think this is probably usually the part of the year where we go into some sort of Wiley Coyote.
It's what I thought of right away. Tangent. I pictured I pictured, you know, a dusty Texas town with a lot of roadrunners and Wile E. Coyote chasing them all.
Looking up Wile E. Texas really quick. It's a suburb of Dallas.
Okay, so my description might have been slightly off, but I stayed by my Crocs thing.
I in my mind, Wile E. Texas sounded like a place where their main export was tumbleweeds.
Mm-hmm, yep.
You know? Oh, yeah. My grandfather and my father used to work down at the tumbleweed factory, and then they closed it down, sent all the jobs to China.
And then, ironically, tumbleweeds just blew through the town.
Mm-hmm. That is, and now, that's the crazy part. That is the crazy part. How about Dan Patterson of Hoquiam, Washington? When's the last time we got a Hoquiam shout out on this show?
What do you know about Hoquiam? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, so if you don't know anything, that's fine. But I'm just curious as somebody who grew up around here.
It's where a lot of the tumbleweed jobs of the Northwest have now moved. No, actually, Hoquiam.
It's a right to tumble state. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Hoquiam is a town down in Grays Harbor County, which is also where Aberdeen is.
Okay.
And which is, of course, where Kurt Cobain is from. People outside of the Northwest may or may not know that. And Grays Harbor County is an interesting part of the state because it was a really big timber and fishing area. And both of those industries have been, you know, pretty hard hit for a variety of reasons. And so there's a certain and it also rains a lot down there. So it really toughens you up as a person or makes you one of the greatest songwriters of a generation.
Mm-hmm.
It does something to you living down there in Grays Harbor County. So, Dan, thanks for checking in from Hoquiam. Christine Pernula is in Renton, Washington. And then Molly Price is over there in Seattle. Thank you so much to everybody who is supporting the show through these very complicated times that we're all living in. I like doing this for my job. Do you like doing this for your job, Andrew?
I do. I think about it. I think about that a lot.
We were texting about that.
Like, that's a true story. I texted you the other night and just said I was listening back to a show. I don't usually listen back to shows, but you and I had one last week where I was just feeling so giggly. I mentioned it several times during the show. I don't know what we were talking about, why. It was just, you know, chemistry. We had that rare moment where you and I had chemistry. Mm. No, I don't know. I just had so much fun doing the show with you one day last week, and so I was listening back to it that night and reliving the fun, and I texted you probably pretty late and just said, what a world, what a job. Like, this is fun.
Yeah. I have that moment semi-regularly where I just kind of either it's we're in the midst of doing the show and we're just having a fun time, or it's like I am reflecting back on something and I think, wow, this is very cool that this is our actual job and it's because of the TBTL listeners. So thank you so much for letting us do this.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
One of our top stories today, the fact that nobody wants to buy Quibi, or is it Quibi? Have I been saying it?
No, it's Quibi.
It's Quibi? Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to want to buy Quibi. It's Quibi the Howard the Duck of streaming platforms, or the... I got to update that reference. What is a thing...
I'm dying to figure out how you're... No, please continue that thought, because I'm really interested in how that thought ends.
You know how it becomes the, like... It becomes sort of an easy, like a shorthand for failed something or other, for a debacle. And for Ishtar, by the way, was also, when I was growing up, I never, like, I was too young to even understand this, but that movie Ishtar with Dustin Hoffman and I think Warren Beatty, right?
Okay. I don't think I know it.
It was a big, big budget movie starring two huge big budget stars of the time. And it was considered to be a huge box office flop, Ishtar. And I just remember being a kid and, like, seeing, you know, Johnny Carson or whomever, whenever they were, like, referencing something that was just a huge disaster, it'd be like, it's still not as bad as Ishtar.
So I wonder if that's a super universal thing or if, like, that's one of those things where you just saw the several references at an age where it really sunk into your head. You know, it's just funny how we can be so influenced by these things that we hear during a small window of our youth.
Yes. Although I do think it actually was really a I think it was a pretty Ishtar, the 1987 American action adventure comedy has become synonymous with the phrase box office flop.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's pretty...
kind of want to see it now.
I know. It's probably... you know, it was written by Elaine May.
Elaine May. The woman from... not Jack Donaghy's mom on 30 Rock. No.
I think that was Elaine Stritch.
Yes, it was. But I only know one Elaine.
No, but Elaine May was, I think, was it Nichols and May, right? Mike Nichols and Elaine May were like the kind of original improv comedy duo. Like before all of this, before really like Second City and Improv Olympic and this whole movement of, I learned this. I know I sound like I can't go a day without trying to name drop old Jim Belushi, but I was talking to him about, because he actually did that stuff too. He was at Second City, and I was like, well, that guy Del Close started all of that, right? And he was like, actually, it was Nichols and May.
Hmm.
And so I think that is the same Elaine May.
I'm looking at her Wikipedia page. You're right.
It's so the fact that she wrote Ishtar, or directed Ishtar, or was associated with Ishtar, should have been a pretty good, like, sort of, you know, I don't know, it should have been a good indicator that the movie was going to, and it's got, you know, these two big stars. Okay, so anyway, for me, for a long time, it was Ishtar, even though to this day I've never seen Ishtar. It was just, it imprinted on me. And then Howard the Duck came not long after that, and then that was a thing where I always knew, like, oh, Howard the Duck, that was something that sucked. That was something that really didn't do well, and that if you're going to make fun of something, you can say it's like Howard the Duck. And now I feel like, for me, it's Quibi.
Yeah, I didn't know that was the thing about Howard the Duck. I know that we're supposed to be talking about Quibi, which is actually something I'm very interested in. I couldn't
read
this article.
They are streaming Howard the Duck 1 minute at a time, by the way, on Quibi.
They should. Okay, I'm sure I've said this 100 times on the show, and we don't have to get into commercial talk again. But I will say that the idea of Quibi was kind of presented to the masses during a Super Bowl, I think 2 years ago now, two Super mm-hmm. Bowls ago. And I don't think there was a lot of buzz around Quibi, and they released a Super Bowl commercial where some people rob a bank and then they're being held up by their getaway driver who's like around the block but won't come pick them up until he's done watching something on Quibi. And they're like, what's a Quibi? And the whole point is, oh, well, Quibi is short form entertainment, high quality entertainment that's really produced. And you can squeeze it into your day because it's short form. Nothing's more than 10 minutes. And I've always been irritated by the company because that commercial works against itself. Like, it doesn't make sense. You're presenting a situation where somebody is late because of Quibi when the whole point of Quibi is it's supposed to be short entertainment that doesn't get in the way of your day. What the hell?
And weren't they also trying to make it like, it was almost a unit of time, a Quibi. I'll be there in
yes,
a Quibi.
Yes, and then you and I were, of course, everything was, I'll talk to you in a Quibi. So yeah. I guess in a certain way, they got us like that because we said it by making fun of them. But it seemed like a disaster from the start. Like, hey, our big, huge buy. What are you advertising? Something that won't get in the way of your day. How are you going to advertise it? We're going to make somebody be late for something because of our product. And then once the company starts failing, not even 6 months into the experiment, in an interview that we talked about, I believe, the founders, Katzenberg, says, it's during the pandemic. We didn't foresee this coming. As if the pandemic is somehow getting in the way of people watching shit on their phones. Like, it's all people are doing.
Yeah, like their argument was, oh, this was supposed to be something that you watch in line at the grocery store because it's, you know, it's 8 minutes long, each episode or whatever. But it's like people are still going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And maybe people aren't riding mass transit as much, but honestly, I think...
Yeah, that's a good point.
But that's still... I guess, but I mean, your 8-minute commute? Still just doesn't... most people don't... If you're taking the subway... Actually, I don't know what people's commute is, but I still just think that... And of course, this is one of these things where I like to dance on Quibi's grave because I don't agree just philosophically with this idea that everybody wants short bursts of content because this show we do is a long dribble of content. And I embrace that entertainment model. But anyway, now they're trying to sell Quibi. Jeff Katzenberg has been going around to Apple and to Warner Media and to, I think, Facebook, the Facebook app, trying to sell Quibi. Nobody wants to buy it, apparently. And part of it is because, as was in the Wall Street Journal wrote about this, and also I'm reading from a piece on a website called The Information. Jessica Tunkel and Tom Dotan were writing this. The problem, they put sort of drolly, is one of the big challenges to selling Quibi is that Quibi doesn't have anything to offer. Here's the exact line. One of Quibi's biggest challenges in finding a buyer is that it doesn't have much to offer. It doesn't own the programming on the service for more than a few years. Basically, the way Jeff Katzenberg was able to get, and Meg Whitman, I guess, because she's also part of this, but like the co-founders, but like the way they were able to get all of these big-name talents to sign on to make eight-minute movies or whatever, or movies that are, or TV shows that are broken up over 8 minutes, was to basically give them the content back after 3 years or a couple of years. And so then the people who are making the stuff can – then they own it, and they can go sell it somewhere else. And by the way, they can take those little 5 or 8 minute chunks and they can stitch them back together and make half-hour shows if they want and resell them. So I don't really know what you would actually even be selling if you're Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yeah, that's the problem. And from a – like from a labor perspective, representing the artists, I really like that. I think that's a good thing. But it does leave you with, well, then what are you selling? Are you selling a streaming platform? Because, like, if you're looking at buyers like potentially even NBC or ABC or somebody who's like kind of in the – who's in the kind of legacy television industry, but they're looking to modernize, they've already modernized. They've already got their streaming services. Like, Quibi doesn't offer, like – a structure for streaming. They don't offer the content. That's usually why you're buying these things. So all Quibi has to sell is the name Quibi, which is Ishtar. You know, like, it's such a conundrum.
Yeah. I was also pretty shocked at how bad the numbers really are for them in terms of subscribers. They have, this article says, between 400,000 and 500,000 subscribers. Now, a lot of those subscribers are because they made a deal, like they're basically people that are getting it for free for a year with their like T-Mobile account or something. So it's hard to know how many people are actually actively paying money to have Quibi. Is it more or few? Is it more people than actively pay for TBTL to exist? This is a real question. But it's like about 400,000 to 500,000. Some of them are people that are just getting it for free. I believe the projection for this to all pencil out was for there to be like 7.5 million subscribers.
Oh, wow.
So we were shooting for 7.5 million. We have 400,000. However, the number of which are actually paying for this voluntarily is not knowable right now. That's a pretty big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I do. Here's the thing. By the way, do you know that your boy Leslie Jordan has a show coming out on Quibi? And I actually want you to watch this instead of me playing the sound for you, because this leaves the listener in the dark. But he kind of makes a funny face when he's talking about Quibi in this announcement video. So Leslie Jordan, of course, he's the actor who, I mean, how would you describe his ascent on TikTok? He's had a third life of his career on TikTok, right?
Yeah, he's an actor who's been on lots of sitcoms. I know he's on Will and Grace. He's just sort of a working actor. He's from the South. He's gay, and he's kind of often played some version of what appears to be his sort of regular personality, but again, for comic effect. Then when the pandemic happened, I believe he moved home to be closer to his mother, who is elderly, but he was living down the street, and he was just kind of bored. And so he just started like filming himself at home and putting him up, I think, maybe on Instagram and TikTok. And that's where I saw him. And he just has this kind of world weary but likable, just, I don't know, vibe to him. That was very much what we all needed as we were initially locked down.
And I don't know if this will work or not. If I can buy you some time when you go to Instagram, because you have an Instagram account, right? You should be able to go to it on your computer or even your phone. How you do it is up to you, Luke. But he has a little announcement video on Instagram saying that he has a new show coming out. This is on my radar because it's cleaning related. He has a new cleaning competition show coming out, which actually sounds really interesting to me. And this, like, quick 10-second video he shot is on set of this new show, but then at the end he says, it's coming out on Quibi. It's okay. An app? And then he just sort of shrugs, like, I don't even know what Quibi is, but I got a show coming out. It's very charming.
Are you going to play this, or am I supposed to play
it? Oh, I was going to ask you to play it from your end, although I can't. I kind of put you on the spot here, but I also think my imitation was right on, so what else
well,
do you want?
Shit.
He actually says that in this, yes.
But what's it look like? I'm on his Instagram page, Andrew. I wish you could see what I have now done in order to make this happen. I have, because I don't know how to get on Instagram on my computer. So I now have my phone plugged into the system. But because my phone is of a generation where it doesn't have a headphone out. I now have plugged a dongle into my phone, plugged that dongle into the audio input for my system. I'm on Leslie Jordan's Instagram page, but I'm not sure which one of these 8 million videos is the real one. What's he looking
like? My apology. And I'll try playing it from this end, although playing audio from Instagram is proving problematic on my computer. We'll see. It was the latest one this weekend, but he's really gone crazy. Here, let's see if I can get the audio working here. I cannot get the audio to work.
It's the sixth one. He's in a little suit.
Yeah, bow tie.
I'm trying to wait for it to reset, by the way, because that's the other thing that happens. You know, it's like an auto loop. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Leslie Jordan. Ladies and gentlemen, Leslie Jordan, unmuted from Instagram.
Hey, what are y'all doing? Look at this. This is my new hosting gig.
Squeaky clean.
Move over vinyl white. It's called Squeaky Clean. It's a competitive cleaning show on Quibi. Gonna be a lot of fun. It's an app called Quibi.
I know that leaves the listener in the dark, but like he's making fun of Quibi at the end. He's just like shrugging his shoulders, like I don't know what this shit is, but whatever. They gave me a show,
and that's if you're Quibi, that's you have to be able to take that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like,
I think
you're
it's
like
great.
You're like okay, fine. Maybe we can. Well, let me just since we've been kind of roasting Quibi now, it should be mentioned also that they still have $800 million of cash on hand.
Now that was their original.
No, their original thing was $1.75 billion. So they've burned through half of their cash, but the other half of their cash is almost $1 billion.
Yeah, right.
So you have, you know, I don't think that the people working there are dumb at all. I think this idea didn't work out for whatever reason. But $800 million seems like it's still enough money that you could like, you know, you could figure something out with this. Who knows? I mean. Who knows what they'll do with it? But I mean, that is—it's like they haven't burned through all of the money, and now they're just trying to sell the URL or something. Mm-hmm. It's like they've still got a significant amount of cash on hand to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I love media stories. By the way, did you see that on the media was a spoiler for people who do the New York Times mini crossword puzzle? I saw this making the rounds, and we must have been tagged in it because we talk about on the media so much. But on the media was the answer to a question in the New York Times mini crossword puzzle this weekend. Now, I noticed some back and forth. I saw Bob Garfield, co-host of that show, tweeting about it because the clue was something like this NPR show about the media, and it's not NPR anymore?
It's not.
I didn't know that. Who's distributing it? Now let's just get real dorky.
Was it ever NPR? I thought it was WNYC the whole time.
They produce it, but NPR's always distributed it. This was news to me. It's a weird way to find out that On the Media is no longer distributed by NPR, but I don't know who is. And I actually went to their website on my phone during the Browns game, and I couldn't figure it out, and then the Browns did something, and I stopped caring.
I had that reaction because that's one of those things that doesn't matter at all to the wider world, but always slightly sticks in my craw.
Mm-hmm. Calling all public radio NPR.
Yeah. And it happens, on the not super frequent occasion that I am like written about or I have a bio somewhere, 99.9% of the time they get it wrong. They say the NPR show Livewire, which is not, it's a PRX show. Again, I don't really know why you'd have to be pretty in the know about the distribution of public radio to get the difference. But it is, and even like in publications that have fact checkers and things like places where usually they're pretty careful about stuff. Even those places I will regularly see, even in the New York Times, like references to shows that I know are not distributed by NPR. They're not an NPR show, but they're just called an NPR show.
That's exactly what gets me, too. If somebody in casual conversation or on a podcast refers to even This American Life, which is famously not NPR, but they say, you know, the NPR show This American Life, like you would just let that go. But when a publication like, and I'm not saying the New York Times has done that, but you've seen people just refer to any popular public radio show as an NPR show, and it's, like you say, a publication that should definitely know better. That gets in my craw.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on with On the Media. They are one of those shows that, well, actually, I don't really know, but it's a tough time to be a public radio show that is distributed nationally unless you're on like a very short list of shows. You know, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, you know, Morning Edition, All Things Considered. There are some shows that are Marketplace, I know, does really well. Noted NPR show Marketplace. See what I did there? But like, there are so many shows that are in this kind of middle range of their legacy shows. They've been produced for a long time. They're on a decent number of stations. Like Studio 360 was one of those shows that I really loved that show so much, and it's no more. And a lot of, I don't know, why am I doing this? Why am I going here for the listeners who just couldn't? They're like, can you go back to talking about Howard the Duck? What's the drop you play from Howard the Duck, by the way?
Let me look this up. I'll be honest with you. I was going to look this up before, and I sometimes confuse my Howard the Duck drops with my what's the movie about the little robot that says "nice software"?
Oh, Short Circuit.
Short Circuit. I get them confused. I have a few. Can I just roll through a couple of Howard the Duck audios here? They're all short.
Maybe you're just the kind of bizarro influence we need.
That's one. How about this?
You know, this is beginning to seriously undermine my self-esteem.
And then this
one. Is
that one,
the duck talking?
I think so. Yeah,
I've never seen the movie.
Yeah, I remember kind of liking this movie as a kid, and I think it was because it seemed like it was a kid's movie, but it wasn't. It was dark and a little sexy. In fact, I think this might hit on that last part a little bit.
Every duck's got his limit, and you scum have pushed me over the line.
Jimmy, do you like to see what I see? A talking duck?
Yeah, that's it. I've been doing too much toot.
I guess that isn't the sexual one. I thought there was some scene where the duck's in the tub or the girl's in the tub.
I call it toot.
I know. I've been doing too much toot. Anyway, that's what I got.
I know the listeners want me to go back to talking about Howard the Duck, but I'm going to just mention that there is – because a lot of the shows that you hear on public radio that might not be produced in your particular city – if they are produced by a member station somewhere else and they are distributed throughout the system by one of there's a few different distributors, what's happening, because, you know, businesses, everybody is a bit strapped financially, and that includes us and APM. You have a lot of stations that have been producing these shows for years, kind of doing an assessment of, is this the best use of resources for our radio station to make this show that then is playing all over the country. And there are a lot of shows that are in that range, and it's a challenging time. Weirdly enough, Livewire seems to be thriving, and that's not just me trying to speak that into existence. Because Livewire was always this just like crazy scrappy thing that people were putting on almost voluntarily in Portland, we are oddly positioned to where we can do the show. We do the show at a very, 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 very affordable price each year. The show is pretty nimble. Again, I don't get the credit for any of this. This was how it was when I got there, pretty much. But Livewire seems to be having this growth period, which is kind of cool. But there are a lot of other shows that I guess what I'm really trying to say is I hope that stations continue to prioritize some of these really great. Like, I was very sad to see Only a Game go away.
Oh, yeah.
The sports show. For years, the first place I was ever able to get a dang story on the radio, it might have been the Marketplace Morning Report. It was one of the first places that would ever let me put my little 21-year-old student voice on the radio. But there's just that kind of there's a certain strata of public radio show that you may be used to hearing that you kind of didn't realize wasn't just some well-funded NPR project, but was just something some folks were doing out of some member station. And I'm rooting for those shows.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I don't know if it puts you on the spot for me to mention, too, that Livewire kind of is able to take advantage of some other, like, vacuums in the system that have been created by the loss of other shows, too, right? So it's kind of like Live From Here.
I don't think that puts us on the spot.
Yeah, no, I just – Live From Here is an APM show which is going away or has gone away? Is that – I'm not sure.
I believe they're done with production, but they're still distributing the show to people.
Yeah, and of course that's on the same network that we are on right now, American Public Media. But, you know, that was a show that was live. You could tell from the name, in front of audiences, is the successor to A Prairie Home Companion. And even though you're not doing it now with your show because of quarantine, that was the format of your show, which is to be live on stage interviewing people and having some fun. And so that must help.
Yep, doing a show in front of a crowd where you're trying to pack a theater out week in and week out and get guests, you know, travel guests in from wherever. It can be an expensive proposition. It's why like Wits went out of business, because it's just, even if the show is a good show and is popular, it's just the economics are very, very hard. Somehow with Livewire, again, this was, you know, they were 8 years into it when I got there, but they had kind of like just figured out some creative solutions to a lot of the financial stuff that has kind of brought down or at least caused the end to come for a lot of shows like us. So now it's like there just aren't that many shows that do what we're doing. And so, yeah, there's a lot of real estate now that we're moving into, which is, you know, kind of been cool for us. And it's been weird to have this horrible pandemic happen to our country and have all this bad stuff going on, and also to be feeling like, hey, this is kind of a kind of a good period of time for Livewire. Not that we want to be benefiting from the downfall of other shows, but you know, I think we're going to be around for a little while.
The fact that you learned how to play mandolin feels a little bit like a low blow, though. If I'm being honest,
I knew the
honest.
Entire time. I just was keeping my light under a bushel.
You're
Did you know
your
that
mandolin
I'm one
dry?
The, I'm one of the foremost mandoliners. Mandolinists? Oh, I'm sorry. Mandalorians. That's right. I am one of the foremost Mandalorians, Andrew. And I just didn't, you know, I felt like people were going to start to be like, okay, what can't this guy do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then the problem is that's a totally different kind of persona to present to the listeners. I like to go with the persona of guy who's not really good at anything. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, why? How did he get a radio show? But then you identify with me because it feels like you got a radio show.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know are, and you also notoriously kind of shy away from the spotlight, so that works against you too. But you fight those demons.
It's like I am. I'm already regretting bringing this up, but it's funny because this the ridiculous and I think probably dangerous online conspiracy stuff around this QAnon idea. The big theory there is that there is a shadowy cabal of child sex predators that are, of course, it's, you know, Democrats, George Soros and Hillary Clinton. This is the theory. And that the current president is fighting those forces, but he's doing it all on the low. He's not talking about it. He is being very coy because he knows that that's what he has to do to properly defeat these forces. And if that element of the story by itself isn't enough to dismiss it as a complete joke, the idea that this sad two-tone nightmare of a human who is still for hopefully only a few more weeks in charge of this country, the idea that he would do anything good and keep it to himself, that'd be like me being good at mandolin and not being good. An impossibility. An impossibility.
I liked your Howard the Duck analogy better.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving this year?
Oh, that's a good question.
You should figure that out.
Yeah, well, we have some time, right? We're still a month and a half away from that, right?
Oh, yeah. It's November. You're right.
Yeah,
I mean, it happens
probably
in
end of November. Yeah, right. What day of the week is it this year?
Thanks. I think it's usually a Thursday. That's the typical.
Oh, I didn't mean day of the week. I meant date of the month. Oh, okay. So the one thing, not that I really celebrate my birthday, but it usually sometimes it falls right on my birthday. So that's why I was kind of asking and fumbling around there. It's the day before my birthday this year.
Oh.
So if you wanted to get me something, I'm redecorating my office, as you heard. So just keep that in mind. So I will only take rugs that are just soaked in cat urine. I don't know. You know, I know that Genevieve was really looking forward to having a cozy Christmas this year. I thought she was joking, by the way. Genevieve being such an extrovert, she's been a champ during this lockdown. But I know that she really misses, you know, seeing people on the reg. Sorry, Luke. But in the middle of the summer, she turned to me at one point. She said,
"Just
boy,
say regular."
She said,
"It's half a second more."
She turned to me this summer and just said, boy, I just can't wait to just stay home and have a real cozy Christmas this year. And I thought she was joking because all we've done is stay home and just had a cozy life for the past 7 months now. But she was really, I think we traveled for Christmas last year. So anyway, I know that Genevieve is really looking forward to like kind of hunkering down and creating all of the warm holiday feels this year. So my guess is that will begin with Thanksgiving. I don't know. You know, every now and then, some years, Genevieve's brother will come and visit. I don't know if we'll be doing that this year, though, because, you know, he lives in a different state, and that doesn't sound really prudent with the COVIDs, but I don't know.
Yeah. I love a good cozy Christmas. I know what you're talking about. In my family, it's always been Thanksgiving is a high holiday, although this year, the Burbank family Thanksgiving is off, which is, I mean, as far as, like, getting 40 or 50 people together, I mean, that's just... I mean, what is this, a Rose Garden ceremony to put a religious nut in on the Supreme Court? No, thank you. So, yeah, that's – but generally speaking, our family Thanksgiving is the biggie. And then the Christmas has always been like – so everybody can do Christmas with their significant others. Like if you start dating into my family, there's usually a talk that's like, hey, sorry, but the Thanksgiving is a non-negotiable. We're all going to be there at my parents' house, you know, doing the thing. That's off this year for safety reasons. But I love what that has meant, though, over the years, is that sometimes Christmas will just be a mellow thing where we just get the pets together and just like, you know, kind of turn up the or put a fire in the fireplace or turn up the heat and play some of the Christmas music. I actually like that, too. The kind of very, very cozy Christmas. Turkey producers are concerned a little bit. Butterball and Hormel Foods are both out trying to put their ears to the ground and do some research and figure out how they're going to sell their 40 million whole turkeys that are eaten most Thanksgivings that they've been growing since April. By the way, this is an article in the New York Times by Kim Severson about how the worry for turkey producers is that these smaller gatherings, people may not get a whole turkey. People may just get like a turkey breast, which may or may not punch them in the face when they try to eat it, or they may just get like parts of a turkey, or they may even just go for a large chicken. That's the concern in the industry. But these turkeys have all been, you know, they had to decide if they were going to try to grow. The turkey farmers had to decide if they were going to grow the turkeys, start growing them back in April. And they did, apparently. So there are a lot of turkeys out there, and it's unclear if our consumption of turkeys is going to change because of how we're getting together.
I wonder if the opposite will be true for Christmas trees, though, because a Christmas tree doesn't necessarily mean a big celebration, right? It could just be people doubling down on the coziness. And also, I don't know how many people travel for Christmas. Vives and I will do it sometimes because we don't have kids and, you know, we don't live around our families. So, you're, you know, like the older generation of our family. So we have the flexibility sometimes just to go to Hawaii or something. But, you know, that's not in the cards for most people. So I wonder if the Christmas tree, if people will just be really doubling down on the at-home Christmas experience this year.
Yeah, this article says that the turkey business has actually been hurting before this. Grocery store sales are up. The coronavirus lockdown have crushed the market for sliced turkey at sub shops, college cafeterias, and catered events. Butterball lost $27 million in the second quarter of the year. So because we're not all out living our normal lives, we're not buying as much. We're not buying as many turkey sandwiches.
No, wow. I would have thought that I would have corrected the market on that. I've been buying so much turkey, but just like at the grocery store turkey. I've been eating turkey like crazy.
Some people, though, think, by the way, that there might even be a run on turkeys. This guy who works at a marketing firm, an analytics firm in Arkansas, who studies the turkey market, said we could actually see something of a run on turkeys because of the fact that, like you said, Andrew, people, when we feel stressed and sad and weird and like life isn't the way it used to be, sometimes we want to go harder at these traditions. Another thing that I didn't realize was cheap turkeys that you can buy at the supermarket, they are loss leaders for some reason. I don't really understand who that benefits. In this article, it mentions that those might be harder to find at grocery stores for whatever reason, maybe because they're going to actually break those turkeys down into smaller parts and sell them off so that, you know, they can make more money. But I didn't realize that a big turkey at a grocery store was a loss leader. I mean, it does seem weirdly cheap to me when it's like somebody grew this bird and fed it somewhere and then slaughtered it, cleaned it, sealed it up in that weird plastic, put a net around it for some reason, froze it and moved it across the country. And it's like 8 cents a pound. Like the economics of that have always seemed kind of weird to me. But I guess those are actually lost leaders. I guess those things don't make that much money. But again, I don't really understand what's in it for Butterball of having a lost leader in the store. I understand what's in it for the grocery store. If they get you in for buying the turkey, then they can get you on the mashed potatoes and everything else. But I don't know what's in it for Butterball.
Yeah, no, me neither. I mean, it might be one of those things, though, where Butterball is making their money because they're selling it wholesale, but then the stores take it as the loss leader, but that Butterball is making the money on it. There's no way that these two industries could help each other, right? Quibi and the turkey industry. Like, if you buy Quibi, the platform, you get a free turkey, or maybe everybody
or vice versa.
Or vice versa. You buy one turkey, you get all of Quibi. I like that.
Actually, yeah, Quibi has a game show that's hosted by a Butterball turkey.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I'd watch it.
It's not good, but you can watch it in 4-minute increments. So that kind of makes up for it.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that they're saying they think might be a possible trend this year is you got a lot of young people who normally would go home and hang with their parents, but those young people are now maybe trapped where they live, whether it's college or their first apartments post-college or out there in adult life.
Yeah.
And so those young people may be trying to kind of recreate a certain Thanksgiving vibe.
Yep.
And so they may go out and buy their own turkeys, whereas in previous times they would just go home. And so that might help make up for this whole thing. Also, the famous turkey talk line and Butterball call center, which are just staples. Absolute staples of call-in radio and of like talk radio around the holidays. We're going to call the Butterball call center and talk to some affable grandmotherly type who's going to talk us through our turkey questions. Those things are still going to be open. They say that they're legitimately expecting a lot of calls from young people with questions. But my guess would be those young people would be more likely to strap on their Crocs, put them in four-wheel drive, which, by the way, when you know how the Croc has that little kind of band that goes around your heel, but you can kind of move that to the front of the Croc, or you can move it to the back, or it's more of a heel support strap or a catch on your. That's people call that four wheel mode.
Oh, do they? Yeah, I saw something. I was trying to think because I saw something on TikTok about my straps or something. People were talking about how they wear their straps.
So the young people are probably going to move their Crocs into four wheel mode, walk over to their phone, and dial up the internet to find out how to cook their turkey, right? I don't see a lot of 23-year-olds calling the Butterball call center.
That's a good point. Yeah, that seems like, well, it really depends if it was a tradition in their house. I agree with you, or at least the quotes you're reading from this industry person who says that, you know, people might be wanting to go back to their roots and feeling all the holiday feels. And so maybe if you grew up in a family where your parents called that line or it was a thing, maybe you do.
How bad
it.
Are your parents at turkeys 20 years in? They got to still call.
Maybe it's a tradition. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of I should stop this sentence because it doesn't really apply to the generation we're talking about. I'm seeing a lot of retro stuff in TV commercials during the football games now, but those retro things are really aimed at my generation, our generation, Luke. Like a lot of I think there's a Pizza Hut commercial airing right now that actually has fake VCR tracking. They've dirtied it all up so it looks like an old, and that's a whole campaign that they're doing, which I actually think is really cool, but it speaks to me very specifically, like this idea of VHS, that like the VHS is to us what, you know, growing up, seeing our parents watch, I don't know, like films on reel, you know, like the.
And they're using the old font.
Yes, I love that font.
You see that font, and if you're our age, it's like you want to be sitting in a Pizza Hut eating a big old giant, greasy deep dish from Pizza Hut and drinking soda out of one of those red plastic cups with the kind of pebble ice. Like it just, it is a teleportation to that moment of your life as a kid. Maybe you Maybe you read some books over the summer and you got some kind of free pizza access.
Yes, yes. I was a big Book It kid. I was literally a big Book It kid. All those free pizzas. But anyway, I guess that's a little off point because, I mean, I do think, though, that generally speaking, these retro, you see, I mean, going retro as a marketing campaign is nothing new, obviously. But I do wonder if people are especially attracted to it now during these times of uncertainty and everything is just so jarring that there's a real comfort in that exact scene you just described, that Pizza Hut scene and that type of thing.
I think the nostalgic Quibi ads that are nostalgic for 4 months ago, I think it's too soon for that.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All righty. Email and or V-mail before we skedaddle?
Yeah, let's see here. This is interesting. Got this from Chandra, who says, I'm a week or so behind, and I was listening recently to the episode where Luke talked about more people showing up at dentists' offices with chipped or fractured teeth due to grinding and clenching during the pandemic. As I listened, I was thankful that I haven't had that issue. Then I went to get ready for bed and I put my tooth guard in and it felt weird. I took it out and the hard plastic tooth guard is cracked. So apparently I am in that group. I'm just fortunate enough that I have a tooth guard. Power out. Right?
That's
going on. Be well, Chandra.
Yeah. That's a lot if you broke the tooth guard.
I saw this caught, while we're talking about pizza companies, I saw this caught your attention, Luke, this email from Jamie, her Domino's pizza conspiracy theory. Do you remember this one?
Yes.
So this, can we set this up a little bit, though, because this started not with Domino's for you, but you're ordering from, is it Jimmy John's that has all the, like, people named Cody or Cody-esque names delivered? It was Domino's.
Yeah. Really? Because Domino's has this tracker. Like, I really, Domino's actual pizza, to me, is pretty low quality, and not even low quality in that, like, I would also say Pizza Hut is sort of low quality, but in a way that I find nostalgic, as we were just talking about.
Yeah.
But, like, the Domino's pizza is legitimately just feels lower quality to me, but what they have going for them is this tracker. I mean, because it's not the most artisanal thing you'll ever eat, they can friggin' make that pizza and have it at my house in under, like, sometimes under 20 minutes, which is bananas because the drive is 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's so, anyway, they have this tracker device that shows you, Connor has put the pizza in the oven, and now Brody is checking it, and now Cooper is taking it out and double checking it, and now, whomever is driving it to you. And I always noted that these were very snowboardery names, and it just kept being like Cooper and stuff. I even asked the delivery person once, who was a young woman, if everybody at the place was into snowboarding. And she said, yeah, we do. A lot of them are skiers, but yeah, same kind of vibe.
Oh, really? So that's a very honest answer. She doesn't sound like she was just kind of like appeasing you so that she could get off your porch.
Contactless delivery.
Sorry. Well, Jamie noticed that all the way there in Columbus, Mississippi, where she lives, also, it's always Cody. She says, after hearing you all talk about snowboarders working at the Bellingham Domino's, I noticed that we appear to have a very hard-working snowboarder, too, named Cody in the Columbus, Mississippi Domino's. Cody makes the pizza and checks for quality every single time I order. Considering that the friendly and efficient staff is almost all black and they are probably not working around the clock, I have an unsettling suspicion that the company is just picking very white names. I understand why they don't want to give out real names, but Cody is literally on the list of the whitest boy names I know. Anyway, just seems racist if this is true and not my imagination, says Jamie. It's a real conspiracy theory.
Well, shit. I mean, I responded to Jamie. I was like, you blew my mind, because of course it's not their real names. I don't know why I thought it was their real names. I mean, because that would just be logistically, that would just be so much work. So when everyone logs in, they have to tell the app if they're on like Pizza Patrol, like if they're on Double Check the Black Olive Duty. Like, there's just no way that would be easy to keep straight. And plus, I'm sure everybody working there moves around to every different workstation depending on what's going on. So just like, as I reflected upon it for one second, I was like, well, of course, it's just telling me the stages where the pizza is, you know, it's being made. That's just, once it goes into the system, it probably tells me it's being made, whether or not it's even happening. And then it probably just knows, you know, the average time between when somebody starts adding cheese and sauce to the bread or the crust to when it's in the oven. So that's when it tells me it's in the oven, is a timer starts in the app for like 1.5 minutes after the beginning of the pizza has happened. Then when it comes out and it goes into a box, there's probably a barcode that does get scanned. So now it does actually know the pizza's done. So it tells me that. And then when the pizza's on the way, the cars are outfitted with some kind of GPS or whatever, and so it's tracking it. But as far as the names of whoever's doing any of it, of course that's made up. And yeah, I mean, those names, if we now establish that those are made up names, those are probably intentionally chosen to be the whitest names you could come up with.
I was intrigued by this. I did a little bit of Googling when I first saw this email, and I'm doing a little Googling now. I'm not, if there's any truth to this, because that is interesting. I'm surprised there isn't some, like, I don't know, Vice blog post or something along those
Mel
lines.
Magazine.
Mel Magazine about, like, why is everybody at Domino's named Cody? But I'm not seeing anything. I do see that there's a delivery job open in Cody, Wyoming, if you want to work for Domino's. But that's the most I've come up with. But, I mean, I can definitely see this as maybe people just haven't connected the dots yet. Or maybe you and Jamie are off your rocker.
There's also, I don't know, I'm going to really regret saying this because maybe we're going into territory that just is fraught. But, like, I would think if I were a company, I mean, ideally, companies in America will hire a wide range of people from all kinds of backgrounds and experiences and races. But wouldn't you think in the current world we're living in, where thankfully there's at least a little bit more attention being put towards lack of opportunity for jobs? I mean, from a very cynical point of view, wouldn't you think you'd pick some names that you thought might indicate that you had a diverse staff, even if you didn't?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm buying into this theory. I'm legit thinking about it. And maybe,
I mean, here's the thing. It's knowable. I can call the Domino's today and just ask, hey, when on the app, are those real names or are those just generated names? I mean, this could be, I can solve this in 1 minute.
Oh, that would be, yeah. I mean, assuming that they give you the proper answer. If they don't lie to you, I mean, this thing could go all the way to the top.
Cody is a known liar.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Oh, this is maybe worth mentioning. Boy, way to undermine this email from our friend Jay. Remember, listener Jay, she came up on stage with us during the boat show that we did, TBTL Live at Sea, almost exactly a year ago. Listener Jay, who I believe you almost had a heart attack, Luke, because she mentioned something about her age, right? The very first sip of alcohol she had was after you had gotten fired from Cairo, I believe.
I believe it was during our last radio episode. She raised a glass in probably, I hope it wasn't a glass. It's probably like a cup, like a plastic cup or something. But I believe she was quite, you know, not of age to be drinking, but decided this is when I'm going to finally have a sip, because these weird adults have lost their radio show.
And I think I bring up her age here only to maybe give her credibility as far as being a having her finger on the culture, the pulse of culture. After I, have been watching my Tums commercials and Weird Al Yankovic videos, I don't know if I'm really somebody to speak on these things. But anyway, Jay says I just had to check in on the Robin Thicke talk on Tuesday. We're talking about Robin Thicke, his lawsuit. Him and Pharrell had a song. What was the song called, Luke? I should have written this.
Blurred Lines.
And they were in a lawsuit about whether or not they stole the main beat from that song from Marvin Gaye. Was it Marvin Gaye?
It's kind of the open, and then like the sort of the open of the Marvin Gaye song has people talking in the background, and you're right, has a certain beat and kind of just overall musicality to it that does sound like Blurred Lines, by the way.
Yes. And anyway, we're talking about whether or not that kind of did damage to Robin Thicke's career going forward. And she says that Thicke was actually blacklisted by many people due to the fact that the song was rapey AF. And his response to the criticism about that song was equally creepy, and the lyrics were creepy. Now, Pharrell, on the other hand, has publicly denounced that song because of those issues and expressed regret in a respectful way. So maybe that has something to do with why Robin Thicke is kind of on the outs.
You know,
as
you're reading that, I'm like, of course, the lines in that song are like, I know you want it. And the song is called Blurred Lines.
And so, also, like, the video itself literally had, I believe, topless women dancing around them as they sang it, right? Like literally topless women. I mean, maybe. Not even in, like, the video. I think there were, like, two versions of it. One where it was carefully edited so that you don't actually see nipples, and then one that was just, like, straight up, like, kind of rated R. So, anyway, the whole thing. And, nothing wrong with nudity per se, but it was
just,
I could tell
you were already regretting.
No, I think the way it's portrayed, you know, it has a real, if I recall that video, it had a real kind of like, this is a weird way to
happy
put
trails,
it, but like,
brother, happy trails.
Restaurant vibe to it. You know what I mean? There was nothing empowering about it. It seemed like these women were like walking around sort of like serving not serving wings with the extra talent attached, but, just sort of like they were there to just dance nakedly around these two men. Like it just didn't, it didn't have the right vibe.
Your read on it was that there's a certain amount of objectification that was read to you that way.
And given the time it came out, I remember being so shocked about it, and that song was so popular. I remember seeing them being like, is this okay because they're making a statement on this kind of objectification? Like, are they making a video that's almost parodying this type of thing? And because other videos have walked right up to the line, maybe we're going to make a statement by just having them completely shirtless? Like, I remember wondering about that. Well, it turns out that it wasn't something that society ended up being super comfortable with. So,
yeah. All right. Well, anyway. So Blurred Lines.
Yep. And
no longer in the running for TBTL Song of the Summer.
Oh, are we getting started on that? Let me just say one more thing here. This came from our friend San Jose Barbie. You and I were just wondering out loud where what mountains Mountain View, California looks out on.
Right.
She says Mountain View has a view of the Santa Cruz Mountains, as does every city in the South Bay. And that's from San Jose Barbie.
I never even heard of the Santa Cruz Mountains?
I mean, I don't know. You and I... A lot of things we learned last week we don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think I have some sense of the geography of California, having lived there, but I guess not. The Santa Cruz Mountains. Okay.
Yeah.
Mystery solved. All right.
That's
a place where we should stop the show, because you know what? You, Andrew, are going to cobble this together, put this on the internet, distribute it to tens of listeners, and then you and I and our friend, the Stewbot, are going to get together for a very special no point conversion that actually involves a guest, because Stu is a Minnesota Vikings fan. We are Seahawks fans, and those two teams played last night. So that is going to be coming up on this very same platform. And also, you can get it on Quibi in 40-second chunks.
Yes, right.
In a week.
Yes.
So that's one of the things they do on – there's some show that's always being advertised. I think it must be a FX shows – I can't remember. I've been watching something where I will say this, the FX, like, they've embarked on this big project or big campaign to kind of tell you about how good their shows are. It's kind of like a big trailer, but it's a cut together. It's like a supercut of all their shows. That. They're very effective.
Yeah.
It really makes you think, man, they're making good TV over there. Like, I give them points. But the thing they're always doing is like, you know, it's like, you know, whatever the thing is, they're like on FX and next day on Hulu. And like, I don't know. It's weird to me to think that there's somebody who's making that distinction. Like, God, I'd love to watch this right now. But I'm going to wait for the next day on Hulu. Or I'd love, you know, like, it's just, that's kind of reminds me of the 8-9 Central or something. Like, it just seems like a very most people, I think, just, I don't know if there's that many shows left that are, you must watch it the night it comes out.
I mean, I think The Vow, I'm getting that vibe from people. People are really excited on the night that drops.
Yes. The Vow is, I was actually going to say, that's pretty much, that's the only one I can think of right now that is at that level. But I don't know why, just when they say, like, you know, on FX and the next day on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that just seems like, I don't know, 12 hours, who cares? You're taking up time in your commercial to clarify that. Is that how people are scheduling their lives? But who knows? Maybe they are. All right, so we're going to get out of here, but of course we're going to be back tomorrow with more of This Imaginary Radio. So if you can, please check in for that. Until then, have a good Monday. We'll see some of you on No Point, and take care of yourselves. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Sorry, Luke. I'm just going back to this.
He'd mess up every rescue. Man, that first mate was illin'. If I was one of them castaways, I think I'd probably kill him. Just about that time, telephone began to ring. She said, just let it, my machine will get it. We're watching the Gilligan's Isle thing. Isle thing. She loves that Gilligan's Isle thing. Isle thing. Please, baby, baby, please. I like the professor. He always saved their butts. He could build a nuclear reactor from a couple of coconuts. She said that guy's a genius. I shook my head and laughed. I said, if he's so fly, then tell me why he couldn't build a lousy raft. And while we're on the subject, I'll tell you one thing for sure.
Power out.